The following is a meeting with devotees with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, recorded on July 15, 2001, in Wicklow, Ireland.
Before I begin the lecture, I'd like to read a poem. A good part of my staying in Ireland is because it's a good place to write. And I've noticed that a number of devotees here like to either write or perform some other art. And last December at my birthday time, when a devotee came from America, Vegavati, she wrote me later that she noticed many of the devotees were very creative. Now that's true everywhere, but maybe there's a small country, so they're all packed in. But the Irish arts are well known around the world. So this is a poem about a great poet of Ireland, W.B. Yeats, and it's written by Auden. W.H. Auden. He's written a poem in memory of W.B. Yeats, but this isn't it. I believe, however, that this is also written by Auden. Now, for us, any of the arts have to be used in the service of Krishna, and that's our challenge in using them, that we don't just go out on a limb and sing a song or write a book and there's no Krishna in it. Prabhupada says that's all zeros. But the arts are very powerful. They strike people immediately in the heart, the way a lecture about the absolute truth may not. So if we can do that, it can be a very effective way to touch people in Krishna consciousness. That combination of art and Krishna. So this poem doesn't have Krishna in it, but I'm reading it just because of the poetry, because it's about poetry itself, actually, although it's very personal. One poet writing to another poet. You may remember I had a poem in DOV, and in the back I said that this poem was it's a form of address. You can address the sun, you can address the moon, you can address anything, and it's a way of writing. So he's directly addressing Yeats. You were silly like us. Your gift survived it all. The Paris of rich women, physical decay, yourself. Mad Ireland hurt you into poetry. Now Ireland has her madness and her weather still. For poetry makes nothing happen. It survives in the valley of its making, where executives would never want to tamper, flows on south from ranches of isolation and the busy fiefs, raw towns that we believe and die in. It survives. A way of happening, a mouth. I won't get into a literature class on explaining, but particularly nice lines are Mad Ireland hurt you into poetry. And this is a controversial line. For poetry makes nothing happen. There are some people who have, poets and others who have objected to that line, activists who say that poetry should make something happen, you know, social activism and so on. Poets should write for those things, but he's saying that it doesn't. It takes place in a place where materialists or ordinary people never want to go, and it survives. It survives the poet, it survives all those people, it survives everything. So there is a touch of Krishna consciousness in this poem after all. So I'm going to start with a letter from a devotee, a disciple of mine, and we can just get right into it. Recently, a friend of mine accepted re-initiation by a Vrindavan guru in the Gaudiya Sampradaya line because he read, his friend read, in every scripture, and he translates Sanskrit, among other things, that the only way to please the Lord is to please the guru. I was happy that he decided to be initiated again, even if it is not an ISKCON guru. His original guru, and she names the ISKCON guru, who was a big fall-down person, because he was becoming so cynical and unhappy about Krishna consciousness in any form. But all of this caused me, upon reflection, to feel a bit miserable myself, because I know that my relationship with you is not what it should be. And therefore, my relationship with Krishna is far from what it should be. Let me tell you a little bit about this devotee while remaining anonymous about her. At present, she's not following the principles or chanting rounds. She was a devotee who joined and took part in the heyday of traveling parties that would sell paintings, and there would be much competition to collect big amounts of money that we thought were needed to maintain big places. And she was a big competitor and a big collector. But when things kind of broke down, she left the Association of Devotees and took up a different kind of life, which turned out to be a very academic life. But she never had any bad feelings about me, maybe in a sentimental way. She told me once, and she was living with some guy in an unholy kind of relationship, that once he picked up a slipper. She once in some competition won a pair of slippers of mine. He said, "What's this?" He said, "Put that down. That belongs to my spiritual master. Don't touch it." And he said, "Well, don't make a big deal." He said, "I wasn't going to do anything out of it." She said, "You just put that there and leave it there." So she regarded that as a holy thing in her life. But now, so you regard the shoe as holy, but what about following the orders of the spiritual masters? So she was thinking about it. Because this brought to her attention that you can't reach Krishna without the spiritual master. So why wasn't she doing more? And she comes up with a few reasons. But it's not so much determination that I lack as it is that I have deeply rooted doubts and maybe disappointments. Not so much in the big things, Krishna is God and the spiritual master is his representative, but that the process, which is very demanding for Kali Yuga, seems to not work for most people, at least on the surface, and in fact, that many, quote, devotees, unquote, are basically not very ethical or nice people. So, how did I answer this letter? Well, first I said that you should not look at others to determine how you're going to do. I usually say that when I give devotees their second initiation, because they'll see many men with a Brahmin thread who aren't behaving, or people who aren't behaving. I said, "Now you're going to see these people, but don't think that that you should do it too. It's a very strict, solemn vow, and you have to do it. And it's not dependent on others not doing it." So I try to make that point, that the contract that you make with the spiritual master and the surrender that you thereby pledged to Krishna, is a single thing, individual thing, not dependent on the misbehavior of any people. They're not turning out good. She made a big case of this. I said, you're just making an excuse in the end. I said, although there may be all kinds of bad things going on in the Krishna consciousness movement, so much so that you say like that, if you weigh it on a scale, all these bad things and your individual vow, you still are making an excuse. What else did I say? Yeah, I tried to approach this this rather deadly accusation she makes that most devotees are not ethical or nice people. I cited the 26 qualities of a devotee. We don't have them memorized, most of us, but you know them. Different things they are, that he doesn't eat more than required, is friendly, and so forth, poetic. And there's a commentary on that, 26 qualities of a devotee, by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And he says that of these 26 qualities, one is essential, and all the others are corollary to it. That's a pretty big distinction there, one on one side and 25 on the other. And that's the one, surrender to Krishna, completely surrender to Krishna. So this is what's important. And if a devotee, well, she puts it in quotes sarcastically, but if a person is, well, she also says, it doesn't seem to work for most people, at least on the surface. That implies that maybe they are surrendered to Krishna, but she can't see it. But if they are, in some essential ways, surrendered to Krishna, I suppose only Krishna can determine that. And the devotee and the devotee's heart, how they're trying to practice. And we should see people like that also, how they're trying to practice. Then he's or she is doing the most important thing, and is ethically better than any other ethical person. What is that verse by Narada Muni? He says, if a person takes to Krishna consciousness but fails, what has he lost? And if another person does all his varnashram duties but doesn't take to Krishna consciousness at the end, what has he gained? And Krishna says, apichet sudaracharo bhajate mamananyavak. Even if one commits an abominable act, if he's resolute in his surrender to me, he's a devotee. So, these are some of the issues that came out of this. But there's more that I wanted to speak on today. And that would come from another letter. Well, yeah, I'll give one more example of this ethical and nice, because it is a heavy thing. Aside from this devotee, there's another disciple of mine. She wrote me a letter, and bang, she's quit this religion, and she's joined another religion. And I was kind of shocked and disappointed. And she's reading their scriptures and associating with their people and everything. And the reason is, she has twins, and it's very hard for her to manage. And so she wants some help from her community that she lives with. But the Hare Krishna devotees, they never seem to have time to drop by her place and help her. And another thing in her life, which seems to be that she doesn't like, she doesn't like the way the devotees never have time to help her. And another thing she doesn't like is the rule that there's no about illicit sex, which she thinks is driving her husband crazy. So in this other religion, both of those things was no problem. The ladies were very willing to help her with her children, take care of her children, and they don't have that rule. So those were the reasons why she left. I'm not going to make another case of defense here, but it's difficult, as she says here, in Kali Yuga, when the Hare Krishna movement gives such strict codes to follow, that the devotees don't seem to turn out to be very nice. I think the devotees involved in that community, in that part of the world, they would have their own version of what's going on there. Or as you were saying, it's another spin on that. what are the dynamics of this lady, her twins, and her husband, and all that, and the accusations she's thrown at them? I know they have a version of it. So I mostly defended the individuals, or I mostly pointed to the individual's burden to follow the orders, regardless of the society, and that was good behavior. But now I want to talk about loyalty to the society. This was a different letter by a Swami, godbrother of mine. I mentioned to him that a GBC committee asked me to write a chapter in a book that they're making. They described that the book wasn't meant to be political, but it was meant to point out differences between ISKCON and philosophically between ISKCON and the Gaudiya Mat. But I suppose such a book could be used politically. But the chapter that I wrote, I wasn't political. I wrote a chapter forget the exact titles, Thinking Prabhupada Straight, and was just advocating that there's nothing lacking in his books, and when you take them without taking other spiritual masters' books, you get the pure understanding he's giving, and if you mix them, you could even take Prabhupada's teachings as lesser than others, and that we like this following, we like this taste, we feel it's essential. So anyway, he took it that I was involved in a defense of ISKCON, which he doesn't particularly think is what should be done. He writes, "I don't think we need to get involved in defending ISKCON. I think by doing so, we often just weaken ourselves and propagate Gaudiya Mat Guru more. Our strategy should therefore be to satisfy the devotees with quality sadhu sangha. Where that is going on, the Gaudiya Mat is just not a threat. If, however, ISKCON neglects that and puts their efforts into a political war, I see little hope that we will be successful in keeping the Vaishnavas in line from Srila Prabhupada, loyal to his institution." The language is a little awkward there. He's saying, we'll be little successful in keeping Prabhupada's disciples loyal to his institution. So, so I would like to talk about loyalty to the institution. How far do we go in saying that ISKCON with all thy faults, I love thee. Or at some point do we say, this is not a spiritual movement anymore, it's just a material thing, and I'll go follow some other spiritual person, or I'll just drop out of this, the people aren't ethical and nice. I have another document I'd like to read to illustrate thoughts, or to bring out thoughts of this. This was sent to me by another god brother, and who does wide reading and different philosophies to come up with different ideas. And this is a Christian author. His name is Carlo Caretta. And it's a chapter from a book he wrote, and it's called The Church of Sinners. And I've just outlined or highlighted a few places. He's writing about the Catholic Church, Christian Church. And some of it, I'm reading it because it's for the parallel points to ISKCON. But they're not all parallel because these two, if we want to call them churches, are not exactly the same. But in many ways, they are. If we take it that the Catholic Church is the Church of Christ, and that ISKCON was set up, certainly was, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, as the founder Acharya, then we have parallel lines. So the Church of Sinners, he means, is his own church. How much I must criticize you, my church, and yet how much I love you. How you have made me suffer, and yet how much I owe you. I should like to see you destroyed, and yet I need your presence. You have given me so much scandal, and yet you have made me understand holiness. When I think of what ISKCON is, I don't necessarily think of all the different buildings and GBC resolutions and everything. Well, that's part of it. But it's just to always identify with the devotees and society, because we are social persons, and to take seriously Lord Chaitanya's definition of Vaishnavism, which is to avoid association of non-devotees, and to make your friends in society ISKCONites. But it does include the strict definition of ISKCON too. Never in the world have I seen anything more obscurantist, more compromised, more false, yet never have I touched anything more pure, more generous, or more beautiful. How often I have felt like slamming the door of my soul in your face, and how often I have prayed that I might die in your sure arms. No, I cannot be free of you, for I am one with you, even though not completely you. Then, too, where should I go? To build another? But I cannot build another without the same defects, for they are my own defects I bear within me. And again, if I build one, it will be my church, no longer Christ's. I am old enough to know that I am no better than others. We see that when people have left ISKCON and actually started their own movement, that it was their movement. Maybe it had some Prabhupada allegiance to it, but somebody else was. They began to have different ways of doing things than the way Prabhupada introduced them in his own movement. And their movement had a different name, a different leader, and everything. The church has the power to give me holiness, and it is composed entirely of sinners, each and every member of it, some sinners. When I was young, I did not understand why, in spite of Peter's denial, Jesus still wanted him to be the head of the church, his successor, the first pope. Now I am no longer surprised. I have gradually come to understand that the founding of the church on the tomb of a traitor, a person terrified by a servant girl's chatter, is a permanent warning for each of us to stay humble and aware of our own frailty. No, I shall not leave this church founded on so frail a rock, because I should be founding another one on an even frailer rock myself. For myself, when I hear the church being criticized, I am pleased. I listen as I would to a serious, reflective sermon inspired by a thirst for the good and a clear, untrammeled vision of things. We ought to be poor, evangelical, We ought to not rely on alliances with the powerful, and so on. No, it is not wicked to criticize the church when you love it. It is wicked to criticize it from the outside as though you were yourself pure. It is not wicked to criticize the sin and ugly things we see. It is wicked to saddle others with them while believing ourselves to be innocent, poor, and meek. I must not present myself to sinners as holy, to the unjust as just, to the impure as pure. This we do when we act holier than thou, going around preaching to people. I must be careful not to be too hasty in climbing onto my soapbox and preaching to others, or so confidently giving them my brilliant instructions. That we could also do by being inside ISKCON. It is hard to separate Adam's sin within me from the transparency of Jesus' prophecy there. It is pride to feel safe and secure in this house of prayer and take no account of Christ's reproach. You have turned it into a robber's den. That's when Christ saw they were changing money and making money outside the temple. He called that temple a robber's den. Now he's saying that the present-day church, it could also be made into that. I do not hesitate to say this. Christ's fearsome words against the temple in Jerusalem applied not only to the temple, but then intent on putting him to death, but to every one of us and every one of our parish churches. Every one of us can become a den of thieves, and so can every one of our churches. I ought to be more humble in my attitude toward things going on around me. In future, I must not be so ready to judge others as vessels of the world's sin and feel myself to be ever innocent because I belong to the church. And then he ends with a real Socko thing. I would like to be the Pope for just one day. I may be mistaken, but what joy I would feel if I sold the whole Vatican to the highest bidder and went to live in a little apartment on the outskirts of the city, or better still, in a tent between the desert and the steppe. Utopia? Of course, but a utopia that does good, like all utopias of the gospel, and the young would be so ready for utopia. So, ISKCON, with all thy faults, I love thee, is the parallel point. And this church has to be reformed. And we should be careful to do like this lady does in her letter, to criticize those who are trying to practice Krishna consciousness. How are we doing for time? Pretty early. Well, maybe we can start some talk. Is there any questions or comments? Yeah.
Well, in a point you made there towards the end, speaking at the Church of the Sinners, that struck a chord with me that, you know, we criticize maybe a lot. I was talking to one devotee recently, but when someone from the outside says something, we despite ourselves and become really defensive. We don't want to really hear it from someone, looking in,
Yeah. So criticizing devotees and the society.
Something that we may even say ourselves, that's strange. I was in Davin one time, and I was just devotee came in, he was initiated by some other party, I don't know who it was, Gaudiamatha or whatever, but we were in the restaurant and he was letting up some steam about the 24-hour kirtan, and
that it wasn't good?
Yeah, making some point, though, the 24-hour kirtan is good, but ISKCON doesn't supply it with the necessary, and even the instruments he was criticizing, and I just said, well, why don't you go and buy it? He told me from his friend this morning, why don't you go and buy one and give it? And he was chasing it a little bit. And I was thinking, why did I say that? But I was just annoyed. This person was, I may make the same point myself, but why is he? It's kind of funny. It must be like this person is saying that that you're part of the whole thing. Actually, you can't, you know, you can't deny it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's your church, so you feel like a mother hears her children criticized. But she may criticize them herself. It's a paradoxical thing. It doesn't have an easy answer, like those opening statements. He was, "How much I love you, but I hate you." It's like some strange love-hate relationship that a person has with his church. And then the further dynamic is what relationship he has with God, Krishna, and sometimes that even has elements of disappointment. I'm hoping to write a book on that, on disappointment with God and disappointment with ISKCON. And that other book will be out in August, Vaishnava Compassion, but I'm definitely working next on disappointment with the disappointment with in general. It'll start with the disappointment with self. A lot of that is I'm disappointed that I haven't become a better devotee after all these years. I don't have so many qualities I aspired for, and it doesn't look like I'll get them. And then disappointment with ISKCON and its leadership and its guidance. And I thought it was going to turn out one way, and it hasn't. And it's really produced an almost traumatic break in my life that I don't. It's just gone off the track, and I don't see how it can be healed. And then you go back and you say, well, maybe it's disappointment in God, actually. Krishna, he's to blame, sometimes people say. People take their hurts back to the to God. But when people get too confused, they go to psychiatrists to try to sort it out, you know, well, why do you have this hate and why do you have this trauma and so on. So I think we may be sort of confused like that. And the spiritual master is supposed to help us not to be angry at persons who shouldn't be blamed and to take responsibility for our own things. And some things is... It's not wrong to have grief about it, but then you have to go on with life. But we always hear the importance of, in a bad sense, of bad association. Kamsa, getting ready for Janmasmi, I was reading about Kamsa after he saw Durga in the sky and he released Devaki and Vasudeva. So he turned out to be pretty good. But then Prabhupada said he was a victim of bad association. And the next day he reverted. So bad association can give us all kinds of bad ideas of understanding these different things: relationship with ISKCON, relationship with Guru, relationship with God. There are plenty of people to tell you that all your relationship with Krishna is no good, and so forth. Atheists say, "Well, you're just hung up on this idea of God, and you're not enjoying your sex life enough." And the age of Kali is making propaganda. Have any of you seen the Abhay Charan number 10? We have it over our house. If we can start lending it to one after another. They're starting the New York stuff. They've been doing good. And they have once in a while they have one of these supernatural occurrences. So they're doing the Bowery scene, and so there's this young man, David Allen, who lets Prabhupada stay in the loft with him, and he's very sort of innocent, clean-cut, young, come to New York City. And Prabhupada's kind of making him into a devotee, and he likes learning the different things. There's one shot of them walking together in New York City in the morning, and he says, I think I would like to become a devotee of Krishna. And Prabhupada puts his arm around him. He says, you will. So he's really nice. And then there's another scene. He's at a party, and he's drinking liquor. And he meets this, like, stereotype bad guy with a black beard and black hair. And he said, so he says to the to him, well, what do you think of the Swami? And he says, I just think it's kind of hokey, isn't it? So this young David says, he defends it for a while. And anyway, making it short, this guy gets David, he makes David fall down. And so then we see, just after he makes David fall down, you see Prabhupada outside in the dark and against the skyline. He's walking, chanting japa. And suddenly this guy is there right in his path. And Prabhupada says, who are you? And I forget what he says. And he starts getting rough. And he says to Prabhupada, stop this nonsense. Beat it. Get out of here. And Prabhupada says, I am not afraid of you. I'm not going anywhere. And then he starts talking like he's not an ordinary person, this black guy, black-haired guy. He says, this is our age. He said, this is the age of Kali. And he said, oh, are you a representative of Kali? And he says, yes. And what are you trying to do? And Prabhupada says, I am coming here to stop all this sinful age. So the other guy laughs. He said, you're just an old man. He said, you can just barely walk. What are you going to do to stop us from enjoying? And then he kind of makes a motion towards Prabhupada, and then all this effulgence comes from Prabhupada, and he goes back like that. He's running away. So it didn't, maybe it did happen. You never can tell. Because Prabhupada certainly is, he came against those great evil forces, and somehow he was not stopped by them. Nobody ever, mugged him or beat him down or anything. And he made great effect in the age of Kali in a terrible, sinful place. He could have been stopped at some point by somebody and challenged, and it's not in the biography, but they put it in this film just as little additions to stimulate people. Well, how did I bring that up? I don't know. Any other questions?
No. I always, in a personal reassessment of my relationship with an institution or my relationship with ISKCON, I kind of mostly resolve that this is superfluous. I can't read too much into it more than I should be, because ultimately, if I'm not identifying with this institution, I'll take on another bunch of institutional ideas, institutional mores, or how I have to exchange, or how I have to be. And it's a matter of, like, unless somebody's a complete at all, maybe only the bones in the streets kind of, but they're fully kind of like, no part of those institutions.
Yeah.
Probably have those, and then they would have some degree, but everybody is always some part of some institution.
Right.
We're always following some idea of how it meant to be.
Yeah.
So if it's not ISKCON, it's okay for it, for all the bits you can, other bits you see that you might like.
Yeah.
Whereas you're finding bits that you do like anywhere else, and so on. So we're always institutionalized in some way. Somebody says, that's not, I do want, I have no more to do with institution. Nothing to do with
it. Yeah.
We always are following.
We're like called the Hare Krishna movement, or the, if you like, or ISKCON. By our attention to our sadhana and Krishna consciousness, we have pretty much dropped out of other things like how the economy is, so that we're a career, money-making career, and a politician, which politician is best. It just sort of happens by matter of fact, because we're absorbed in things that will lead towards the eternal. So then, drop out of Krishna consciousness, and then you'll fill up with either that, or maybe you become a race car man or something or other. You'll join some society. So why not this one, which has found you? And the other one will be full of flaws also. There is no perfect one. And then this other point, plenty of the flaws are just within yourself. I gave those talks. Serve according to your inclination, serve according to your limits, to try to make it more comfortable and happy. That's another thing. We are pleasure-seeking, pleasure-loving beings. So do this service to Krishna in a way that is easy and pleasing and possible. And give your most to it. You don't want to drag, but go forward with love.
Well,
that's what this God brother was saying. Don't get into it. Just get into good sadhu sangha, Have occasions where you get together and chant as much as possible and talk about Krishna and share prasadam and have different, go to the holy dham and go in parikram. And yeah, don't spend so much time in political reforms, but just make spiritual reforms, and then everything will be all right. So, yeah. Of course, there is a lot of talk. At the annual meetings in Mayapur, there'll be movements made that the women should be treated in a different way, and children should be protected. You can't say that these things are of no importance, but. And then maybe there's a kind of person who likes to take that up, and some who don't. Because there's so much disagreeing about what's the best way to do those sort of things.
And without the real sadhana, those things would be not harmless for
us. Yeah.
But the verse says that you shouldn't see the pure devotee as being anything.
It's impure, but it's trying to be pure. And it's the best thing there is in the impure world, in the impure age of Kali. And there's all those verses about the chanting of the holy names can make us pure. The advice of the image so many ISKCON preachers give is how the person is in the shower washing off, and if you say to that person, "You're dirty," his good answer is, "But I'm cleaning myself." So as long as ISKCON is functioning for the good sadhu sangha, providing that, then they, even if they are still dirty, they're cleaning themselves off. And in coming, not just what does Kali Yuga mean? It means that we're all born into it, and we have so many bad habits ourselves that we have to clean ourselves up. When I write, I try to write very honestly the human experience of following the scriptures and Krishna consciousness, and often it comes out as memories of impure states of mind coming from before I was a devotee or that are still with me. So if your question is, well, is that the pure Ganges with some dirt in it, or is it a dirty river that's being cleaned? And maybe there's not too much difference. When a city, sometimes a city puts tremendous finances and efforts into purifying one of their dirty rivers, and then it becomes clean again.
So one comment that I heard about on that particular issue one time was I happened to be asking, I asked actually Satchinanda Maharaj about it, and he mentioned that he heard something from Kadamba Kanada Maharaj, which I think is one of them. And he said that Islam sometimes can be seen on different levels. On one level it was that he said that you know, you can get involved in the did you hear this and did you hear that and did you hear what this person said and what that person's doing.
Yeah.
That's like on one level of Islam, you know? And but he said that the another level of Islam though is those five things, like living in a holy place, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping the deities and associating with devotees. And that's the level, in one sense, that's like, and you sort of compared it to the neophyte level, and that's like more the Majjhima level. And then the highest level, which he didn't say but too much about that one, you know.
That that's also ISKCON.
That is, yeah.
And there's an ISKCON in the spiritual sky, Prabhupada would say, yeah. So you wouldn't think of it exactly like the Philadelphia temple or something. It would be a different kind of building and different kind of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's another way, I was just thinking though, a lot of letters I get, people have gone to, my disciples have gone to Vrindavan or come back to Vrindavan. They do it in a lot of different ways. And I hear different things, how it's changing. And some of my God brothers saying, one of them even said that the people who go to Krishna Balaram temple, they're the ones who are just interested in this gossip and everything, and looking for husbands and everything. But if you want to really experience Vrindavan, we go somewhere else now. So now I was thinking of, well, I don't know when I'll go, but I'll be going one of these days. So at first I was thinking, well, definitely I want to avoid the temple and not be one of those people. But then I thought, why don't I do just the opposite and do some good? I just go right into the temple and get a room in the guest house, you know, the most looked down upon kind of experience of Vrindavan, and maybe I can help in some way if it's become so poor, rather than stay away from it. So in your description of the different levels of ISKCON, maybe we should do some work with the lowest level instead of find, oh, that's the bad level, so let's desert it. Manu, you and I have been exchanging letters about my own balance of emphasis on individuals or institution. You say I tend to favor the individual. I think I gained some balance today on the heavy on the institution. Yeah.
You know, you brought up a word there that seems to catch my attention. That was disappointment. And I'm just thinking about a lot of things you're discussing. I've actually been reading this book, Something Happened on the Way to Heaven. I can't remember the devotee who wrote it, but it's a conversation, or it's a discussion with devotees who've left ISKCON.
Wow.
In a have you not seen this book?
No.
And it's like with George Harrison. I mean, all sorts of different people who've been involved at Shalom Sundar that may have left the movement, and where they are now and what they're dealing with and what their reflections are. And the whole object of the book is for us to get for devotees to be able to read it and have some insight as to what's going on in these people's lives, and not just criticize them. Or it's quite a positive focus. And it's written by
Drivena. Who's Drivena?
Drivena.
His interview?
There's interview and kind of life stories and how, mm-hmm. what they went through and how they left and what they're involved in. So many different things, but a lot of there's so many different aspects that are approached on that. I find it very interesting in helping me understand things that I'm going through prior to reading the book. It's not that I'm reading them and going, oh, I guess I'll have that problem as well, but there are things that I realize are going on inside of me when I deal with this different aspects of the institution. But one aspect is, I think a big part is, I have a hard time finding disappointment in blaming it on Krishna. I don't, you were saying that taking it down to that root, maybe I'm missing that, but I feel quite disappointed in myself that I get caught up in so many things and get so easily distracted. And I guess the false ego can have us thinking when we come to Krishna consciousness, how we're really a saintly person, and we go through this whole thing. I'm actually a pure devotee, and we go through this being knocked down. And so much can come from that disappointment that it's just something I guess I'm struggling with. And when you brought that up, it was something that really came to the fore for me. I was just wondering if you might say something more on how we can deal with that and overcome that up.
I'm kind of preparing myself to do some digging into that thing for myself, but I don't have any immediate thing to say about it. It's something that will take introspection for yourself as to why you feel that way.
A lot of it also extends into a disappointment in our struggles with vows, our struggles with things that we're told that we need to do in order to become saintly. And
well, that sort of thing. When you make a mistake, then you just have to pick yourself up and do it right again, you know, and get back to the passable level. Like, what is it we're disappointed at? We're disappointed that we're not Raghunath Das Goswami. Don't be disappointed, Prabhupada used to say. And you can't imitate it. Are we disappointed at something less or less? There's no need to be disappointed at a lot of those things. Just feel good. Feel that you're in a safe situation and keep going forward. But if you feel like you're really cheating, then you have to find a way to not be disappointed by not cheating. That'll be the only thing that will remove it. Prabhupada used to say, like, if you have a boil on your hand, you can't just blow on the boil. You have to cut it and remove it. You want to say, please remove this disappointment. It has to be actually removed. And you have to say, all right.
Maharaj, I like that point that you made about disappointment with God, you know, that you can come down to that level sometimes, because I feel that myself, that sometimes I want to blame Krishna, that why doesn't he help this con more? We know that not a blade of grass moves without a sanction of the Supreme, so sometimes I think, well, if things are kind of heading in the wrong direction, why doesn't Krishna just step in and, you know, just fix it back?
Yeah.
Sometimes steer it, you know, in a better direction. Or even that Krishna doesn't send us more devotees to help.
Yeah.
Help the institution, that we give out so many books, but those books are just sitting in people's houses, and Krishna's a super soul in all those people's hearts, but he doesn't give them a little inspiration to, you know, pick it up off the shelf and, you know, somehow, like, take a little bit to Krishna consciousness. So I could really relate to that point, because I feel like myself is a bit of a problem in my spiritual life, that
his will is
I feel resentment towards Krishna.
His will is mysterious to us, and he doesn't have to explain himself, you know, why he didn't do it one way or another. He has his reasons. And they're not subject to our understanding, but they are for ultimate good of everyone. So that's like our showing of little faith when we demand that according to our understanding, we want to know why it didn't turn out as we thought it should. And on the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna wanted everybody killed. So you can question these things, but he had his reasons. Not subject to ordinary morality. Or else he wouldn't be God. Take one more. Any of the ladies? I haven't had any. Oh, I'm afraid. Yeah.
I was thinking, regarding that point, the analogy given of somebody working on a piece of embroidery, you know, when you look on the underside of it, it's just a massive tangled thread and a big net. And when you turn it on the other side, it's a beautiful pattern emerges, you know, you can see what the person was actually working at and trying to achieve. I try to think of that sometimes as regards, like, you know, the Krishna has, like you said, the supreme plan for everybody.
Yeah.
And that we're right in there in the middle of the massive thread. You can't actually see the beautiful pattern that's emerging on the other side of the top.
Yeah, not from our point of view. But we should just be, without knowing the total pattern, just be faithful and go on chanting and hearing. Like Srila Prabhupada, he presented the scriptures so boldly and conclusively, and he didn't really talk about these things so much, how they all fit together, but just that this was what Krishna wanted. All right. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.